Jeremy here. Just before we get into the show, wanted to give an update. We have a new tier on our Patreon. That is the Sheikah supporter tier. For $5 or more a month, you get a week early access to episodes, as well as getting to pick games that you play alongside us. Each month, people in this tier can pick a game that we'll play. We'll stream it on our Discord for everyone else to see. And it's been a lot of fun. We just played the Rogue Hero Ruins of Tassos game, which is this roguelike, Zelda-like game that is very similar to the old Four Swords games. It's very chaotic. It's very, very fun. If you want to join up in that, go to patreon.com/chatofthewild. If you can't afford that, we do still have the smaller tier. Just a reminder, people that join in that tier, they get ad-free episodes. They also get access to our side quests episodes, where once a month we record an episode just talking about all the other games that we have been playing. You also get to pick the games that we play in between Zelda games, what we call our Gaiden games, as well as getting a shout-out. If that sounds good to you, once again, go to patreon.com/chatofthewild. Sign up, support us. We really appreciate it. Anyways, that's all I have, so let's get on with the show.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Chat of the Wild is part of the HyperX Podcast Network. To find out more information and other great shows, go to podcast.hyperx.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Chat of the Wild. In this season, we are playing The Legend of Zelda Spirit Tracks. Joining me for this season, we've got Brian Auer, taking a drink.
Taking a drink of my coffee. Hi, I'm here.
BC Nelson.
This season brought to you by Key Lime LaCroix.
And special guest for this season from the R3 Sense podcast, Jonathan Dunn.
Hello there. It's far too late in the UK for coffee.
Never. What? You're not playing hard enough.
Just a generic orange drink, maybe.
It's you know.
And I'm Jeremy Harvey. Jonathan, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about your podcast?
Our podcast, and originally it was called Our Three Cents, which featured me and my two friends, Chris and Minty, counting down our top 100 favorite video games of all time. So there was three top 100 lists, 300s, 3 cents. That was the idea. We managed to stretch that format out for about 3 years. And finally reached the apex of our lists earlier this year. So now we're back with a new format, slightly new branding, O3C Games, O3C Podcast. And what we're doing now is we're going back through our top 100 lists and trying to crowbar in the games that we've played in the last 3 years that we think actually need to feature in our lists, and rejigging, reappraising sort of all of those games.
Okay.
Also chatting about what we're playing at the moment, answering questions, and generally sort of talking up and diving right into just full-on game chat.
Yeah, I always wondered, did you guys make your list of 100 before the show started, or
we did, yeah.
Was it changing as it went along?
Well, we sort of foresaw the problem that could happen. So we did. When we started the show, we said, right, we're drawing a line under this top 100 okay. list. And then, you know, when we get to the end of it, then we can rejig things. But it's okay. mad to think, like, for someone like me, like, I feel that my identity as a gamer is kind of defined by roguelikes and souls-likes. Mm. Mm-hmm. And 3 years ago, I'd never played Dark Souls. and things like I'd never played Dead Cells, I'd never played Bloodborne. Mm-hmm. There's so many big games that I hadn't played, and also, you know, so many little games that I hadn't played, games that didn't exist at the time. So it's really nice to be spending this season now sort of going back through that play history and giving them their sort of their due diligence in our lists. And also, it's quite fun to then sack off games from our list as well.
When we were
dedicating like an hour long episode to talking about a game, it's like you really have to work sometimes quite hard to justify its place in your list. And sometimes mm-hmm. I know we all felt that we were clutching at straws a little bit, thinking, actually, you know what, I really just shouldn't have had Sonic 3D in my list at all. So now we can say, right, doesn't matter. Sonic 3D is out, and you know, all of these new games are in. But it has been.
I don't know
tough.
What I was thinking about Pinbot. That shouldn't have been there at all.
Exactly.
Right. Just waking up in the morning, being like, "All right, time to record. What am I talking about? Wait, who put this in here? Who put this in here?"
So we'll be looking forward to your new number one episode about Hades.
It's possible. Hades is certainly in consideration for inclusion into my top 100 list now. I will say that much, at least. We may all end up with new number one games. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I probably won't. I might do. I don't know.
Also, I'd like you to, as you introduce yourself to our audience, tell us about your history with Zelda. Let's start. What's your favorite Zelda?
Ooh. Now, the tricky thing when we were doing our lists was we made the decision to say this was our 100 favourite games as opposed to the 100 greatest games or the best
right.
games we'd ever played. Because I would yeah. say, from an objective point of view, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is the greatest game ever made. I don't see how people can objectively argue that any other way.
Same.
However, I've had a much longer history with games that have been more personal to me, like Link's Awakening, which was the very first Zelda game I played, and The Wind Waker, which was the first proper 3D Zelda game that I owned and was obsessed with. And The Wind Waker was what ended up as the highest Zelda game in my list. I think it ended up being my third favorite game of all time was Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker. But if it was a case of saying you can only play one Zelda game for the rest of your life, it would be Breath of the Wild, because I'm not
an
idiot.
You could actually do that too.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, economically it makes sense. Yeah. Like it's the right choice.
Exactly. But then I'm always, you know, I'm always a bit of a sucker for an underdog as well. So the games that get a little bit less love, like Oracle of Ages, I think, is an absolute masterpiece, and I think is an unsung hero.
All right,
Zelda's cool.
Zelda's pretty neat. what is your least favorite Zelda?
Ooh.
I mean, it's a hands down easy decision for me, because I recently played Skyward Sword for the first time, and I played the Skyward Sword HD version on the Switch.
Oh.
I didn't play the original version. So I was coming to it fresh. I'll say first off, I think the porting team did an unbelievably good job at porting that game over to a console with standard controls. I tried playing it with the motion controls with the Joy-Con a little bit, but I don't really play my Switch in docked that much, and I don't really like motion controls. So the way that they implemented the motion controls onto buttons and joysticks was is absolutely phenomenal. Unfortunately, it is the only game in history that asks you to play it like that. And, you know, for somebody who's played a lot of 3D action adventure games, and, you know, I was right in the middle of playing Monster Hunter Rise at the time, and it took me a little while to get used to that, because I was trying to tweak all the controls in Monster Hunter to be more like Dark Souls. And then Skyward Sword came along, and it took me probably about 10-15 hours to get used to those controls, and it took me about 20 hours of Monster Hunter afterwards to get used to normal game controls again.
Yeah.
So unfortunately that, you know, sort of marred my experience of the game, because there were a lot of things I liked about it. I like the visual design of it. I know that was quite divisive at the time, but then, you know, I think the art style of the Zelda games has been absolutely spot on in terms of making sure that the games are timeless. And I love some of the writing in it. I think it's one of the best written Zelda games. I think the supporting characters, I think Fee is brilliant. I think, oh, who's that guy? Who's the guy with the hair and the
Groose.
Yes. He was like, oh, I was so touched by his character arc. It was wonderful. I know for a fact I'm never going to play that game again.
That's
it's not going to be fun for
so
me to play.
So we won't have you on for our season.
you can do if you want somebody just to bring everything down a bit, but yeah.
That's an interesting point, though, that just changing the motion controls into, you know, controller controls turns that game into just something that is unlike anything else out there, based on what they need you to do. It's kind of a weird translation. I never thought about it like that.
I mean, I think, like, you know, the Zelda series is, you look at the way that Ocarina of Time works in terms of controlling action in a 3D space, and just like the Z targeting or L targeting or whatever it is in games now. That was the first game to do that. And then every other game went, well, this is how you do it. This is how you solve the issue of combat in a 3D space. And you can imagine, though, that when people were trying to figure out the best way to do 3D controls in terms of, you know, moving in a 3D space and all that sort of stuff, they must have gone through ideas like the Skyward Sword setup, being like, oh, maybe if you use this control stick to move their arms and this control stick to move their legs, you end up with something like Octodad. And, I mean, to be fair, that's a crossover I'd quite like to see.
I'm trying to think of the game in the review, but there was some early review of like a first person shooter, and they said, oh, you have to use two sticks to control to move and shoot, and like, this is horrible, this will never catch on. And now it's like a standard. So how many abandoned control schemes are there out there?
Exactly.
That reviewer was probably like my dad, who grabbed the N64 controller for the first time and tried to use it like an 80s arcade game and like the joystick with his fingers.
I mean, to be fair, I still get livid when it says press R3, and I'm like
looking around all over the control
because
it doesn't even label
R3.
It
exactly
it's not even a labeled button.
It's a secret language.
It was one of those things where one day everyone was just like, yeah, R3.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
The weird thing is like how natural it feels for that to be the run button with things. It just feels right.
Click R3.
But there we go.
Anyway, that's not what we're talking about here. Lastly, before we get into the game, I do want to know, what's your experience with the DS Zeldas?
Yeah. You ready for a new least favorite Zelda game?
Well, I mean, there is an interesting sort of parallel with Skyward Sword, because obviously Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks are very much built on the same mentality of, we need to make a Zelda game using this control gimmick that is central to this console.
Yeah.
When I first played Phantom Hourglass and when I first played Spirit Tracks, I loved them. I had a really good time with them. And to be fair to Nintendo, who go, you know what, we reckon we can make a Zelda game where you control it entirely with a touchscreen. They did. They absolutely did. It is definitely nowhere near as good as playing it just with standard controls.
No, you don't gain anything.
You don't gain anything. The only, like, I'm sure, I can't remember if it's in Spirit Tracks or if it's in Phantom Hourglass, but the only like function that a DS has that is utilized to make Zelda a better game is some puzzle at some point where you have to close the DS to transfer a stamp from like the top screen to the bottom screen. That is like the only time I've ever gone, couldn't do that on something else.
It's all downhill from there.
Right.
The entire DS family of systems just tanks right after that moment.
But I mean,
they went at it saying, yeah, we need to make a Zelda game that takes full advantage of the DS, and then they didn't realize that their list of bullet points was so short when they were just like, oh, we have five things, we needed 20. Well, let's just keep making a Zelda game, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm glad that they didn't make... Oh, maybe they did. Did they make you blow into the microphone to blow sail in Phantom Hourglass?
No, yeah. not to blow the sail, but you do have
like
to blow...
Yeah.
You make sounds to get people's attention in it.
Sure, sure.
It
because
kills
having
emulation.
Having one character in the game going, yo, listen, wasn't annoying enough.
And as we found out, you can have different levels of yelling. As Jeremy got like a better,
I got the high score of yelling, baby.
Yeah, than we did, because I just simply blew on the microphone to be like, I know this registers, so it'll be fine.
Yeah, it's like when you realize you can win a game of Wii Tennis by sitting on the sofa, just twirling your wrist.
Yeah, everyone starts up, on the floor, and then eventually they're just like, yeah, I can sit down and bowl and get a strike.
Never. I will never do it. I'll always be so in for it. So, Jonathan, one thing that we do, or we try to remember to do whenever we start off a Zelda season, is talk about what we named our Link. It lets you name it whatever you want. Sometimes you can throw symbols in there. You can do whatever you want. Jonathan, what did you name your Link?
Well, very imaginatively, and also quite egocentrically, he is called Jonathan.
Oh, okay. Which, is that something you've always done?
You know what? Like,
if it fits.
I'm always pleased when Jonathan fits, as opposed to just having to be Jonathan or Jonath. But
eight characters.
Yeah, it did fit. It did fit. And but usually I just name him Link because what's his name?
BC, what'd you name yours?
So as we'll get into, I'm playing on the Wii U port. So at the time I was a little discombobulated due to the interface that I was working with, and it actually autofills your username into the name. I didn't know that that was a thing, so I'm just named BC because it automatically, I opened it up and it said my name.
That's okay. How he ended up being called
weird
Jonathan
feature.
In mine.
How much time do you think it took them to program that? The thing that's completely unnecessary.
I mean, to pass
really
one
weird.
Value to a game from a completely different system, who knows?
Brian, what about you?
I mean, do you even have to ask? It's Toon Link.
Boy.
And so we're going with I Farted once again. Because in every single Toon Link game, it has brought up nothing but just treasure. Just wonderful, wonderful moments. So this will be the last time I get to do it.
So for mine, I went with combining the name Link with Touch and came up with Tonk.
Are you... Is that how you're doing it? Wait.
Yes. I just wanted to leave that there, Brian.
Oh, okay.
Just all right, cool.
That response.
I'm disappointed that nobody went for any train puns. In hindsight, maybe I should have called him Choo Choo or something.
Choo-choo.
Hey, big choo-choo train man, if I could fit that in there.
To be fair, like my wife referred to this game as the train one, right? So, yeah, that's the official name of it, I think, the train one.
So before we get into the actual game, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about the big choo-choo game.
Take a time machine back to before the world went to hell around the year 2000.
The 80s and 90s were so rad. The movies, the music, the TV, the games, that's what I want to talk about.
If you're cool enough,
join us and listen to Less Than 2000, because that's all we talk about.
Adam and Chad live
Less Than 2000.
Now part of the
HyperX
Podcast Network.
The Chat of the Wild podcast is part of the HyperX Podcast Network. HyperX is our sponsor and the maker of the acclaimed Quadcast and Quadcast 5 microphones. Quadcast USB mics look and sound amazing, and they're packed with features. With four selectable polar patterns, you'll get great sound no matter what you're recording. The included shock mount and pop filter mean you won't have to shell out extra cash for a great setup. Then there's the eye-catching LED indicator and tap-to-mute sensor, so you can tap in and tap out to stop broadcasting accidents. It's time for you to tap in with the HyperX Quadcast and Quadcast S.
Hi, it's me, Jeremy Parrish, co-host of the Retronauts Podcast, the only video game history podcast that's been around so long, it's also a part of video game history. Every week, one of the motley rabble who hosts this show leads a deep dive into the past, whether it's to break down a classic franchise, learn more about a timeless game from its creator, or just wallow in nostalgia. Relive history with Retronauts, here on the HyperX Podcast Network.
So we are back with Spirit Tracks. It does the opening that we're used to with a lot of these Zelda games, where it's talks about some old world and all of that, and about how a bad thing happened. They do call it the Demon Lord, which that is Ganon, but I'm gonna guess Ganon is not in this game.
I'm gonna go ahead and say you're right.
That we're just gonna have some other evil. No, and it would just seem weird. This, of course, is then shown to be a story being told to us by Old Man Nico.
Yay! Yep. Look at him. He still gets it. You know he does.
This immediately made me confused.
Uh-huh.
Because
oh, yeah.
I had to, and I never, never do this. I mean, I stopped doing it a long time ago. I consulted the timeline.
Oh, goodness me.
Because I
was
like...
Every now and then we get desperate enough to think we'll find help and solace and comfort in those... In that diagram, but I don't know.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, everyone said like, oh, this is a direct sequel and all of that. And then I'm immediately like, how could this be a direct sequel?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, sure, we have Old Man Nico here,
Nico
but now we
it.
Have a new, we have a new Link and a new Zelda, and this Link and Zelda don't seem to know each other.
Uh-huh.
So I had to go into the book, and I read some things, and here is what is supposed to have happened since then.
There we go.
And this would be very important, and we did not see this in the previous game. They discovered a new continent.
Right.
And they went and colonized that continent. And that's where we're at now. We are now 100 years later, after they discovered a new land, created... potentially a new castle. They did say that they found the tower that we'll be dealing with. They found it.
Well, you know, most civilizations are established next to a towering structure of ancient...
It's true. It's true.
Indiscriminate origin.
You get more points that way.
Yeah, that's where Nordichico, that's how that started.
And so, yeah, they do talk about Tetra as being a founder of this land in the book. And maybe there will be some things that we'll come across later in the game. But having, you know, still being so fresh from the other game and then jumping into this that is supposed to be a direct sequel and being like, what is this game? Like, other than one character being old now, everything else is totally different.
Do you see why I was so mad when... at the end of Wind Waker, I was like, I want Wind Waker 2. I want a continuation of these people, you know, trying to establish a new Hyrule. And you're like, well, you got the DS games. I'm like, no, those are not sequels to Wind Waker. We will get there in a year and a half, but no.
I was also very confused because I remember in a previous episode, I mentioned that I just want a game where you get to play as Tetra, do like Tetra things. And I think, Jeremy, you were like, oh, well, be careful what you wish for. And this is not a game with Tetra. This is a game with some dude in a conductor hat and some lady named Zelda.
Yes. This is true.
In Wind Waker, they take Tetra away halfway through the game. In Phantom Hourglass, Tetra's gone during the opening cutscene. And then in this game, I presume they're just like, no, she's dead, so don't worry about it. We're not even going to go there.
I mean, the whole... I mean, we all know that the timeline is... trying to think of a good word.
Exactly.
Bunk. It's bunk. That's what I'll say. It's absolute trench. And like it's one of the things that I actually felt was I'm not gonna make this a regular thing, but it's one of the other downsides I thought about Skyward Sword was the fact that that felt like the first game that was made with the timeline in mind. This is set at the beginning, and I felt that it sort of cheapened it a little bit. But like, there's no need to have things set in a timeline. And the weird, like, they could easily have just said. This like Spirit Tracks didn't need to be set in the timeline. It didn't need to be. It didn't need to worry about if it's on a different continent or the same continent or if it's the same Link or a different Zelda. So why did they put Nico in there?
Well, yeah, we have that.
It was in his contract.
Also...
Yeah, that's very possible. To be fair, he signed up for it. Yeah, a 2-picture deal.
Right. He ended up being the smartest of the pirates. We just didn't know it.
Old man Nico will return. So. We also get another character of Alfonso, who is a descendant of Gonzo, who was one of the people that went along with Tetra.
He looks similar to one of the other pirates, yeah.
Yeah, and he's supposed to be the great-great-grandson. And there's supposed to be like 100 years have passed in here.
So Nico is old as dirt.
Super old.
Meanwhile, this other guy, his family line has had like 6 generations.
And they're dead.
In those 100 years.
Nico, tell us your secrets.
I'm scared of Nico now.
Nico was 5 in the first 2 games.
Yeah, he didn't realize. But yeah, Alfonso shows up and shakes us a bunch to wake us up because, did I even need to say it? Link, the first time we've seen Link, he's sleeping.
Well, he's fallen asleep to Nico's story.
Right.
I mean, Nico said to me, I can't believe this. You know I farted. A lot of people would love to be in your position. As my roommate, you get to see my work for free.
He's Nico's roommate. You are an old man Nico's roommate. You are a child, and you are the roommate of this old, the elder of this island, of which 7 people live on. But that's always been an issue with him.
Well, he seems to be like an entertainer, so you get to see his set for free every night.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound good.
Alfonso explains to us that we are running late for our test to become a conductor.
Yay. Every night I go to bed and dream.
Oh, yeah. I had something else. Hang on.
Oh, yeah. Open that tome.
Nope, wrong one. It's in the encyclopedia, not the Historia.
It's like thumbing through a guide for a GTA game.
For the listeners, Jeremy is rummaging through his mahogany bookcase as we speak.
Yes,
mahogany
of every Zelda book. That's all I have. There, it will not surprise anybody that the reason they went with trains. Is because Eiji Aonuma likes trains.
Loves trains and motorcycles and...
That was this week's Zelda fact!
That's worth the price alone.
He likes giant flying birds as well.
Yeah. In our conquest to save the land against whatever evil will come, we are also going to be getting good at conducting a train in this Zelda game. I think this is one of the reasons why so many people overlook this game, because the premise is just weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to, like, you know, we've had many ancient stories about heroes traveling to distant lands via boat or even like some kind of flying thing. They came across a giant eagle and it took them somewhere and all of that. This is the first one that I know about that takes place on a train.
Well, that's because no one's recontextualized this game the way I have been. While we've been doing the show and referring to it as a Pac-Man homage, which it totally is. It totally is.
Kind of is.
I mean, I'm waiting for the point where I can read the game as an extraordinarily biting satire on the Industrial Revolution. And I promise you by the end of this season, I'll have drawn that parallel with a lot of foundation.
I mean,
fantastic.
I mean, you know, inappropriate use of child labor has been a theme running throughout the Toon Link and Zelda games.
It's all quite Dickensian. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You could go and talk to some people in this town. They don't say anything useful. It's tutorial stuff. It's pick things up. Here is something that I noticed immediately that I'm very happy with. To do your roll move, you don't have to do little circles at the edge anymore.
Yeah,
you just double tap.
You just tap it.
Fantastic. Hopefully we get more of those improvements throughout this.
Brilliant
we'll
control
see.
Mechanics. It's the we first time. Only, first and only time we'll say that.
Since I am talking about the controls, BC, why don't you explain exactly how the Wii U works for this?
Okay, so first of all, I'll say poorly. Second of all...
Obviously.
So I'm playing through the Wii U Virtual Console, and it's awesome that they have DS games ported here. I think it would make more sense to just have these DS games, I don't know, available on the 3DS, but I digress. So the way it works is on your screen and on the gamepad, you get a visual of a 3DS. Like, I think this happens in other, like, emulated systems or emulated games on modern consoles where they kind of show the overlay of what it would have looked like, the device you would have been playing on. So you got this, get this cropped in view of a DS, an open DS, and you have your two screens, and you basically use the Wii U pad as a touchscreen. But the problem is, it's not that the bottom screen is on the Wii U pad and the top screen is on the TV. And if there's
no.
a way to make it that way, that would be amazing.
No. No.
Is there not? I thought there was, like, different options.
Oh, no.
I think there's...
If there is, I just didn't have time to figure it out. So I hope
look
there
into
is.
It.
So what? So hang on.
But so, essentially, you're just playing on a somehow lower resolution screen than the DS. So if you're just moving around, I can look at my TV and like it looks fine on the TV. But as soon as you need to look at what you're touching on the touchscreen, you just have to look at the gamepad. So I'm essentially playing on a picture of a DS. On the Wii U gamepad, and it is not great.
That's the most terrifying thing I've ever heard in my life.
That's a worse idea than the timeline.
God. Yeah, that's
yeah.
The worst idea.
I'm having to Google this so I can get a visual of it because it just sounds.
Oh
horrible.
My god!
There are screen settings, BC.
Okay.
So you should look into that. If you hit the ZR button. And you can go to screen settings.
Oh, God.
And you can adjust the layouts.
Yeah, it would be
okay.
It would be great. And maybe I'm wrong and it shows you this and I'm going to get flamed in the comments. But it'd be nice if that was permanently displayed on screen of hit this button to switch to a different view. Because I'm currently holding the Wii U gamepad with one hand and the stylus in the other. And it is not a fun experience. Anyway.
No.
Anyway, we then get to see, after Alfonso explains to us, like, well, we're going to go and you're going to get your stamp of approval from the princess herself. This is what the princess does nowadays, is she just does paperwork for our train conductors.
Yes.
And in order to do that, like, your first test is getting to the castle in under 300 seconds. And then the game turns into almost like a Professor Layton-looking puzzle thing
yeah.
where you get this top little maze with the little icons of other little trains going around. And down at the bottom now, we have something that is similar to how the sailboat mechanics worked in the previous game, except you are not controlling like where you're going. You're only really controlling the speed at which you go, which honestly give me limited controls in this kind of setup because it was bad in the first place. So I'm fine with this. Honestly, I'm actually looking forward to this more than freeform sailing that I was able to do.
Mm-hmm. And had to do back and forth in that game a lot of the time.
Yes. Also, you get a little pull thing that goes choo-choo, and it's nice.
I mean, that is the greatest thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's all you want. I mean,
right.
You know, That's what I came for. I mean, what I got. I'm satisfied. You know, I'm just going to phone the rest of the season in now.
Best thing about trains.
Yeah. That pull cord, you know, swept the awards at Dice that year. Like,
it's... I was almost a bit annoyed that it had a function. You know, you can use it to scare animals off.
Right?
The track.
Yeah, right. It would have been better if it just did. Yeah, you just do it for fun. Yeah.
Just here for because I'm constantly, you know, tugging on that thing. So yeah,
and you can just hold it too, which is great. You can just keep it going.
Yep.
Literally set the train to max speed and just held down on the horn. And I was like, "Great, hey, I think I'm set."
It's the terror train.
Anything gets in my way, it's their fault. I was using my horn.
This is what Ozzy was talking about all these years. This is the greatest.
One of the functions that it does have so far is the scare off cute little animals that might be standing on train tracks so you don't run them over. Mm-hmm. Did any of you run them over?
I didn't.
I'm actually interested in what happens. I assume just the train takes damage.
Yeah. They're fine. I was wailing on the horn, but because they were too far away when I first started the horn, I had to. They didn't hear it. I would have had to stop honking the horn and then start it up again for it to register. And so I ran right into them because why would I stop the horn?
So did you take damage from it then?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Okay. So what we also have to manage is when we get to intersections, we have to decide if we're going to go left or right, and you have to keep an eye on these other trains that are coming around and make sure that you don't run into them. You also go across a stop that, I don't know about you guys, I immediately stopped there because I was like, can I do some more adventuring please?
You've got 300 seconds, okay? You're doing the...
That's time to stop for a coffee.
Absolutely.
Not during your driver's test. No.
You know what? I'd say that's fair enough.
Your teacher was too strict on you, Brian.
Serious business.
I used to have cigarette breaks with my driving instructor, to be fair.
So we get through all of that. I did have a really close call with one of the trains as I was going through, but it just stopped. Like, I got ahead of it, and then it just stopped on its own.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what happened there. You know, I was fine. Didn't take any damage or anything.
I took my eye off the ball and I went right into the back of one. I had to start again. I was so angry.
Oh, it just like ends it?
Yep.
Yeah. I had to start again. 300 seconds. Do you want me to explain how to drive a train again? Absolutely not.
I've already.
Everyone knows how to drive a train.
I misinterpreted the first time you get to a crossroads and it's like, it shows you where the other trains are going to turn. But I thought it was telling me to turn right, and not that the other train was turning to the right. So I just smashed right into it. I also got into a point where I was almost to the castle, and then another train was coming the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So I had to go in reverse, and there's this weird action movie scene of me outrunning this train face to face. And then turning to the left so I can turn to the right, and then I can go back to the castle.
Yeah, I had a bit of that as well.
I know that Zelda games have often been criticized for having too much hand-holding, but I'm going to say, based on our experiences, it's almost certainly necessary. Oh.
I was going to say, I thought at first I was the only one that would have like aced my test, but BC's action movie moves right here, like, absolutely, he won this.
Yeah, I did this twice because I played this yesterday, and then this morning I was like, I could just erase my file and do this again in 10 minutes. So why not? Why not just do it again just to make sure I catch everything? But the first time I was going too slow, and so I was basically just stuck in traffic the whole time, like slowly riding behind each train as they eventually got out of my way. But today, if you start at full speed at the very beginning, you can get there a lot faster and make some very perilous crossings, including a race to park, like BC was talking about.
Love that. So that brings us to the castle town, the town that we always get to see first before we make it into the Hyrule Castle. And this is actually where we are going to be wrapping up this episode. Not much going on, just an introduction to both the game and to Jonathan, who will be joining us for at least the majority of this season.
Booyah.
So for the next episode, we are going to be completing the Forest Temple.
Ooh.
Very exciting. There's going to be a boss there. There's going to be an item of some power there. We'll see.
Lots there might be a train things. There. Don't know. We'll see.
If there's not, we're going to bring one.
Could be a train wreck.
It could very well be a train wreck.
Oh, God.
Let's find out.
Yeah.
Do all that. Meet back here, and we'll talk about it on Chat of the Wild.
Choo-choo-choo!
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
That's what I came for.